Did you know that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day? Hi, Zach Kuhn here, entrepreneur, Nashville music business professional, and I'm here to tell you that if you need to recruit people for your business, ZipRecruiter is the place to do it. But don't take my word for it. You should take my word for it. And here's what you need to do. You need to go to ZipRecruiter.com/Zach. That's www.ziprecruiter.com/Zach to learn more there about recruiting the best people for your business. The fastest, best people fast. You know that fast, good, cheap pyramid? Well, this is doing it all. This is fast, good. And yeah, you got to check out the pricing online. That's kind of above my pay grade. But ZipRecruiter, check it out. Too many ads. Here we go. From Nashville Briefing and the American Songwriter Podcast Network, this is the Zach Kuhn Show, episode 58. Here we go. Joseph Hudak. He is the senior editor at Rolling Stone Nashville, overseeing the entire country music vertical and so much more. You know, what I love about Joseph is that I think Rolling Stone is really known for pushing journalism, especially in music. Of course, Jan Winner really pioneered what rock and roll journalism looked like in the 60s. And I think that Rolling Stone were really behind credibilizing, is that a word, credibilizing? Giving credibility to journalism in the country music industry. I think they were really at the forefront of that. And now we talk all about this. We're seeing country music journalism in Forbes and the New York Times and all these other incredibly credible sources. But I think, and I'm, you know, I might be wrong, but I think that this really started, or at least was pioneered, by Joseph Hudak at Rolling Stone Country. And I'm going to go with that. So here we go. Episode 58. Let's dive in. Here's what I'm curious about, not to just dive right in.
Yeah.
But I was going through everything. I'm really curious about this. When you do the Rolling Stone Country Pick of the Week, and you list like maybe the 5 songs, or you know, you throw out what the best picks are that week.
Sure.
How do you and John Freeman go through everything? How do you know those are the picks? How do you come up with that list?
Well, the reality is we launched it out of necessity. Right or wrong, the PR move these days is everyone wants to have a premiere. And for us, I mean, look, it's a business, right? So it's return on investment. And the return on investment for a premiere for an artist that may be up and coming isn't going to be, a friend of mine says, is the juice worth the squeeze? Right? Is the juice worth the squeeze? And sometimes it's not, right? So in order to maximize that juice that we get out of the squeeze, we would compile this list, right? And so it works out better for us. It works out better for the artists because there's more people seeing a list of the 5 to 10 best songs of the week as deemed best by us or must hear songs by us than there is just writing one premiere about one artist. So, you know, we go through, John and I go through everything. My colleague, John Freeman, we've been working together forever. John and I go through everything and kind of try to look for a nice mix of diversity. That's kind of what we do. And, you know, it's great. The best part of it is showing some of the new talent, you know, so we try to stay away from, you know, mainstream, I take that back, not mainstream, but we try to stay away from bona fide stars already, certified
right, the Luke
stars.
Bryans of the world. We
yeah,
don't
right.
know about the Luke Bryans single.
They don't need to be on the list. It. Right. I like to see, up and comers get that spotlight. Does that make
How
sense?
Do you, absolutely. How do you find new music for that? Is it mostly like press releases and things like that that you go through, or do you have your ear to the ground?
Sure. Yeah. We press releases, obviously PR pitches, but we also do look at Spotify, look at what's on YouTube, look at what we may have back in the day bumped into in a live setting. What's on the charts kind of thing, like the streaming charts. I think that really helps, you know, it casts a wide net then, you know, cause you see someone like a Zach Bryan who is blowing up, in a viral way, And you kind of want to get ahead of that if you can.
Right. Are you on TikTok at all? Is there anyone on the team scrolling through TikTok and looking for TikTok artists?
The reality is not yet. John and I run our socials for the most part at Rolling Stone Country. We certainly have since we launched in 2014. And that's been, it's a process. I think people who do social media for a job,
It's a full-time job.
And it's not just, I'm just going to post something on Instagram. There is a whole, checklist that you have to do to really get your desired effect, desired
Absolutely.
Result.
So I think, the friends of mine who are journalists are mm-hmm. some of the most informed people I know. Like, I'm always blown away at how informed journalists are about everything, especially in the space that they cover. And I'm curious, typically, in normal times, you're out at shows, you're running into people at events, you're hearing a little bit of gossip here, you can get a coffee with someone. You have an element to it where you can sort of, there's a way to plug in and stay informed. The past year, as we've been completely isolated, has it been harder to be in the know of what's going on? Have you had to make an effort to reach out to people? Do you find being Rolling Stone, is it people reaching out to you to make sure that you're in the know about whatever they're working on? The past year, what has it been like making sure that you're in the know about what's happening in country and in Nashville?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I mean, folks reach out to us with what they have coming up. But, you mentioned TikTok and stuff before. I mean, the social media realm can't be discounted. There's so much that you learn just from scrolling through Twitter and seeing the people that you follow talking about something that may not be on your radar, and you get excited about it and you start digging into it and you're learning. That's basically how we've been doing it. I mean, I have to be honest, Zach, I don't think for us, the pandemic hasn't really certainly hasn't slowed us down. If anything, we've been busier. And I think part of that is because so much of what we cover has become real life news, which is not to say that prior to the pandemic, country music wasn't real life. It's more about everything is kind of, country music is kind of like representative of where we are as a country now. Someone said to me in an interview the other day, and they were right. I think because of that, while haven't been writing about tour announcements, we've been writing about how an artist may tour today, or have they gone out and done shows, or a lot of that.
Was that surprising? I feel like at the top of the pandemic, I thought that music journalism was going to have less to write about because there was half of an industry that was shut down. But it does feel like there's been more to write about, or there's been all these other topics to cover.
I think there's been more to write about. Yeah, I really do. I think there's, as country music becomes more and more popular, and the artist pool becomes more outspoken, and more passionate about certain things, and certain things they can't look away from. I think there's been no shortage of avenues to explore with various things, obviously from the music to the touring industry to social issues.
Absolutely. Do you know how consumption has been? Has it stayed steady, or has it gone up or down in terms of just in general people reading media today, or are they spending too much time on TikTok and on their social media?
I think we've all been on our screens way much more than is healthy over this past year, and that's I think that the data, the numbers that we see on our site certainly bear that out. I mean, when you have tragedies like Joe Diffie dying from COVID, that story for us was so big, which is really remarkable. I think his passing kind of hit that spot where fans who were listening to him in the 90s are now the Facebook, I don't want to say generation, but they're using Facebook primarily as their source of communication.
Right.
And so for whatever reason, all those pieces kind of align. And he died. News of his death came out on a Sunday. And that was an amazing outpouring I haven't seen anything like it, like as far as a story, like the way that his death resonated. I mean, we've had some bona fide, you know, legends pass. Obviously, Merle Haggard, you go back a few years, but just something about Joe Diffie's death really seemed to move people in a way. It was something to watch. I was glad to see him on the Grammys the other night, in the In Memoriam
tribute. Yeah, that was really cool to see. And I think it also might have been with him that he didn't seem that old, or it seemed like he had a lot of life left to live. Where Haggard seemed older, you know, it seemed like he was taken too soon, which was
maybe. Yeah, it was something. It really was. It caught us, you know, caught a lot of folks off guard, I think, because he was 61. I may be wrong on that. I have to look. But yeah, in any case, I didn't mean to be a downer there so early in this, but, you know, we're just sitting here talking about consumption and whatnot. And you know, it kind of brought that up and you start thinking about the passion that fans had.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Wow.
Yeah, no doubt.
So going back for a little bit, so you did not study journalism in school, if I'm not mistaken. You studied English, which I guess is similar, right? If I'm not mistaken, am I?
No, you're correct. That's right. My degree, I have a bachelor's degree in English and a minor in creative writing, for whatever that means.
Right, studies. Right, right. And then,
but no, I didn't study journalism.
Okay, so your first gig was you were a copy editor at TV Guide magazine,
right?
Which is what does that mean? Were you editing the articles or were you editing the ads? What did that job entail?
So it's funny, man. I was 26 when I got my first legit job. So it's weird how life works. You know, you go through phases trying to find work, and I was doing manual labor for a long time. My father owned a lawn irrigation business, so I was doing a lot of that from when I graduated college to until I got my job at TV Guide.
And are you hoping as you're doing manual labor, you're like, I'm just trying to get that writing gig, or how am I?
Oh, totally. Yeah, right. Totally.
What's the path? Did you want to go into music? Like, were you a big music fan, or at that point, anything? You have taken anything and then writing?
I think it was entertainment. I really wanted to do some sort of entertainment writing or working in that field in some way. And you know, the way the universe works, it's like my father had one client. I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania. My father had one client, one customer down in the Philadelphia area. And so I happened to pick up the WAN ads that day. And the WAN ads, this is how far back, and it was 1999.
What does that mean? I don't really, what is a WAN ad?
Dude, the WAN ads, the newspaper, you know, like the comics. Right.
Oh, is that what they're called? Okay.
The WAN ads. Maybe that's a colloquialism from where I grew up. But yeah, the classified ads.
The classifieds. Right. Okay. Yeah.
You're
yeah,
not
yeah.
too far from me.
That's what I was going to say. I'm not too far, but I've never heard that. But the classifieds. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm sure I'm not in the know here.
Gosh, the WAN ads. Maybe that's a Wyoming Valley thing. So in any case, that's where I'm from. So yeah. So picked up the classifieds and found an ad there that TV Guide was looking for a copy editor. And the guy I worked with at the time, he's like, you should try this. And I said, yeah, all right, we'll see if it works out. And yeah, it worked out, man. Got the classified ad actually in the newspaper, drove down, took an editing test, did the interview, whole nine yards, and then got hired as a copy editor. So yeah, so I started there. I was editing you're younger. The TV Guide back in the day was small. It was a compact digest, Reader's Digest size, right? Like in the Seinfeld episodes. So all of the different listings of what you would watch on TV were in black and white in the back, you know, in a format, grid format and everything. And so each individual show would have something written about it to tell you what it's about. Just like when you're on your cable box there, right? Press the button, it tells you what that night's rerun of Seinfeld is about.
Right, right.
So that's what it was. So we had this system and, you know, the writer would write what that night's episode of Seinfeld was about. And then I would go in and edit it to make it, you know, for grammar and fit and spelling and, you know, all that fun grammar nerd stuff, you know.
But you moved through the ranks. Eventually you started to do more, like you would write more original content and you would start, you moved up. You were there for like 12 years, right?
God, you did your homework, man. Yeah, I was there for 12 years. And so eventually I became friends with the one editor of the music, who did a lot of the music programming at TV Guide, you know, and I'll abridge all this, but eventually they relaunched the magazine as this full-size, full-color kind of like Entertainment Weekly, People Magazine. And so I was brought on board in that group to help relaunch the magazine. And in doing so, I attended my very first CMA Awards, the year that the CMAs were not in Nashville, but they were in New York City at Madison Square Garden.
With Brooks and Dunn hosting.
Yep. Yep. It was crazy. And I went there. My mom and I went. We took the train from Philly. I took my mom and we went to the show. And yeah. And that was it, man. Met a whole bunch of folks there and kind of started making my inroads into Nashville.
So did you learn when you were learning journalism, was it an easy parallel from having an English major to diving into journalism, or was there a learning curve when you were doing copy? Like, I've heard people say that who are copywriters that they would literally hand write copy to try to learn copy. And you're like, are you reading the Joseph Sugarman books on copywriting? Like, was it easy to kind of get that under your skin, or was it a skill that you had to develop?
I mean, as far as editing and grammar and stuff, it kind of, I mean, that's what I learned in English, I think. I mean, so I may not have learned AP style in college per se in some class. Well, I guess that's not true. I guess I did, but you know, it was more about, you know, the mastery of the language and grammar and such. So yeah. And then it just kind of came natural. I mean, everybody's got their thing and that was my thing. And I was able to do that and parlay that into, becoming when I left TV Guide, I left as senior editor, and by that time it was my title, but I was also writing and, you know, doing interviews and stuff like that, you know.
Holy cow.
Talking to the guys from, like, you know, reality shows and, you know, Flavor Flav and all kinds of fun
that's
stuff.
Badass, right? Like, wasn't that, was that,
it was, you, great, like, yeah,
you had, totally. You had done it, you had gotten the career in journalism, the family was off your back for studying English. No, I'm just joking. So you go to CMAs, and then when did you start working for Country Weekly? Like, did you start writing for Country Weekly while you were at
TV Guide?
TV Guide?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I was freelancing for Country Weekly, freelancing for them, and then ended up, you know, just everything kind of moved a certain direction. When I started seeing the writing on the wall at TV Guide, you know, can understand, with technology being what it is, we're all able to see what's on TV on our phone, on our set-top box, you know, on your smart TV, all of that stuff. So as I saw that writing on the wall and things were, you know, I knew that things were going to start downsizing. I kind of ramped up my overtures in Nashville and thought, well, I'll leave Philadelphia, because I was at the Philadelphia office of TV Guide. They were actually founded there in the 50s in Radnor, Pennsylvania. And then the main flagship office was in New York and still is. So as I saw the writing on the wall, I knew I was going to have a contingency plan, and Nashville was that plan. And so Country Weekly hired me. And I moved here in 2012.
Did you know the country, like the country culture, or I get the country format, I guess? Like, did you know the artists and the players, or did you have to kind of figure it out and dive into it?
Yeah, no, I knew it pretty well. I mean, look, I grew up in the Pocono area, which is very rural, big country music loving family. My mom was in the Willie Nelson fan club. So, you know, all of that kind of stuff was very big and influential. You know, when you're a kid, it's all around the house. And then I think there was a time where I gravitated away from that, or I kind of fell out of orbit with it or whatever. And I really wasn't into the country thing. And then Oh Brother, Where Art Thou came out. And what was that? 2000, 2001. And it reminded me of all the country music my grandfather would play. And I was like, wow, this is really great. And then I started listening to Willie again. And yeah, and just kind of snowballed from that, and it put me back in that mentality, and like
that
I realized, like, wow,
movie.
This is great.
Yeah,
it was a great movie, right? And a terrific soundtrack.
It's a great movie,
so good. And yeah, and that worked that way, and it just kind of all came full circle again. And no one at TV Guide was really covering, you know, country music. And you remember, like, back then it was probably like, what year was that? 2006? Is that when
country's
the CMAs were
like
in New York?
The ugly stepchild, right? Like wow. Rolling Stone Country was announced that they were opening a country. I mean, it was only in 2014, which wasn't that long ago relative to the history of Rolling Stone country music. Like, did it feel like it was an underserved genre at that time, or not really? Like, or was it covered fairly, do you think?
I don't think it certainly wasn't covered the way it is now by what we do. I mean, if you go back, if you look over my shoulder, you could see a Willie Nelson Rolling Stone cover that's hanging on the wall. So that's, you know, that Chet Flippo, the great Chet Flippo, did that story, and that's back in the 70s. So yeah, there's always been coverage, but as country music became more slick and polished, I think it kind of, you know, didn't kind of fit with what Rolling Stone was writing about until you started seeing people like Jamie Johnson come along. That's when I remember a TV guide at my desk. I had a page ripped out of Rolling Stone stuck to my tack board of a story about Jamie Johnson that someone wrote. And I was like, well, that's cool. You know, and then it kind of, as things got a little grittier and Nashville got a little more, you know, adventurous and popular, I think it broadened country space in pop culture, right? So that's what I was saying. Right. Like, if you go back, like, it was in New York, the show's in New York, and that was a big deal, the CMAs that year. And so I met a lot of folks there from the different labels and from CMT in particular, and they were all, you know, excited to have a quote unquote national publication, which TV Guide is covering country music, because it wasn't as these days, Rolling Stone, Washington Post, New York Times, everyone's
Forbes
doing big...
is covering country music. It's
crazy,
like,
right?
Everything's covering country music.
It, as far as I remember it, right, it wasn't that way then, you know? And I think to have like the TV Guide name come along and say, hey, we want to write about the CMA Awards was new, you know, new ground. I don't want to say new ground, but it was a welcome.
It was validating. It was
validated. There you go. Right. And so that's how it worked out. And so then from that, I started working for some folks at Country Weekly and did the connection game, you know?
Okay, so the golden question, I mean, like I said, I remember in 2014 when they announced Rolling Stone Country, and as a country music fan, I was really excited about it because I was like, oh my God, now there's going to be more great coverage. I didn't really have, there wasn't really anything I was reading in 2014 about country music. It was like little blogs here and there and like Music Row. But how do you get the gig at Rolling Stone Country? Who puts you forward for it? Or does it open up and you go, I'm going to get that, and you start hustling for it? Like, How's the opportunity come together?
The hustle, I guess, is the best way to describe it. But the woman who hired me and launched Rolling Stone Country in 2014 was Bevel Dunkerley.
Who's now at Shandora.
That's right. She is just fantastic. And so,
and she started the boot, right? That was kind of her
she
claim.
Started the boot, right.
She started
the
boot herself, yes.
That's right.
So she was at Rolling Stone Country and then she brought you on, or
she, so yeah, again, the abridged version, so I don't bore everyone, but it was Gus Winter's idea to launch a Nashville office of Rolling Stone. Gus is Jan Winter's son. He was just had this great vision for what this untapped market in Nashville. And so he wanted to do Rolling Stone Country. I mean, everyone saw country music exploding then, and he was smart enough to jump on it and really put some resources behind it. So he hired Bevel. They were getting ready to launch and they realized that they were going to need someone else. So Bevel hired me, and we launched in June of 2014. I started in May and we got everything up to speed, started going. We were off to the races, had this big launch party at, where was it? Peter Nappy, I think, shoe store in Germantown. And like Keith Urban played and the air conditioner wasn't working that day. And everyone was like just sweating through their clothes, but it was so much fun.
It's Rolling Stone Country. It's a new, wait. So first of all, did you ever,
yeah, go ahead.
Jan Warner, did you ever get a chance to connect with him?
Or did I meet Jan? I did meet Jan, and it was amazing. Yeah.
And what did it give you? Because he really pioneered like rock journalism and really validated rock journalism. And now you were starting country journalism and maybe giving that a new form of validation. Did it give you any advice or any direction, or like what are those interactions like when you connect with him?
You know, it's like meeting a page out of history in a way, because he's just been there at the birth of so many incredible moments in music history. So to work with him, and especially to work with his son Gus, is what really I think it's really just kind of guided us the way where to go, you know. And like I said, I can't say enough about Gus's vision for this. And then so when Bevel and I started, we just really kind of decided to cover the things that moved us and that were important. And you know, it's grown and evolved since then. You know, as you said, Bevel left and went on to Pandora, and John Freeman came on board, and we've just been You know, I look at it as, Zach, I look at it as not, yes, it's Rolling Stone country, but I really look at our office as Rolling Stone Nashville, because we cover so many things. We cover country music, we cover Americana, and not only that, but we cover, I think, the rock and roll side of Nashville, which may or may not be tagged, you know, under our vertical of Rolling Stone country, but it is very important to what Rolling Stone overall does. You know, the Black Keys are here, and Jack White, and
right, of course,
Hailstorm, and, you know, all these old 80s rock guys live here, and it's just very cool. And yeah, so it's, to me, it's Rolling Stone Nashville more than it's Rolling Stone country.
Absolutely. How many different, because there's Rolling Stone Latin, right? And then didn't Rolling Stone Australia recently open up also?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. There's a bunch of different international things, right? But, you know, it's so big and there's so many things that I know what's in my little part of the world, you know, so, and my colleagues in New York.
So, but I guess the question is, like, do you meet up with corporate ever? Are there ever meetings with all the Rolling Stone branches to talk about journalism or the nature of the publication? Or do you really kind of have free reign to do whatever they trust you at this point? It's been 5+ years.
Yeah, they certainly trust us. But it's a matter of, you know, just staying in contact in the Zoom era and everyone doing meetings and talking about what's important and what's breaking and, you know, kind of batting around ideas. It's a really, the staff at Rolling Stone are brilliant. I've learned so much from people that have expanded my own worldview, and, you know, not even to mention expanded the way I write and such. So it's really a, you know, it's an education as you work, you know?
Yeah. Holy cow. So you've written a lot about, like, gun control and country music and other important issues. And typically, generally speaking, to overcast it, country music is a pretty conservative audience, and writing about those topics, does that feel like risky and important, or did that take bravery, or did you feel like that was obviously the right thing to do? Was there any pushback internally that maybe this would alienate the audience, or did you always feel like that was an important thing to write about?
I think it's the important thing to write about. It's, you know, if you have this as your career, as your platform, and you see things that are just unspeakable happen, and you have the ability to and affect some sort of change with that, or just shine a light on it, I think it's imperative that you do so. I think the essays you're referring to, I kind of wrote first person. I grew up in a hunting family. I still hunt, not as much as I have, but it's been a while. But I grew up in a hunting and fishing family, a gun family. So I kind of thought that I was particularly suited to write my thoughts about some of the things we've seen and witnessed as a country, and why I thought it was important that in terms of country artists, if they have a platform that they feel this way, of course, I'm not going to ask anyone to say things that they don't believe. But if you are disturbed by what we saw this week in Boulder, if you are disturbed by what we saw happen in Atlanta last week, and you have a fan base that may traditionally skew conservative, and you can share some ideas with them about why perhaps we may need an assault weapons ban or whatever the talking point may be, I think you should do that. And that's kind of what I wrote about in that one piece you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So not to change gears so drastically,
sure,
but there was a series that you did in 2017 that was like Country Artists in Trucks. What was it called? What was that truck that must have sponsored the whole thing? That's a fun series. Could that come back? Who puts that together? How does that come together?
Man, from your lips to Ram's ears. I'd love to, man. It was such a good time. So we did a thing, you know, in the world of media, a lot of things work with partnerships and brands, and, you know, it's how everyone keeps the lights on too. And we had a deal with Ram for 2 years, I believe it was. And one of the things we decided to do with them was this video series in which I had a different Ram pickup and would pick up some different artists, country
Every
artists.
Every video had a different RAM.
That's pickup, correct. Right.
That was, yeah. I guess yeah. that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
And so we went to, the first one was in Austin with Midland, which was just a riot.
By the way, the Midland guys, cause I've interviewed the Midland guys a couple times.
Yeah, and they're awesome.
They're awesome. And they're so like overtaking, like they're such massive personalities.
Yeah, very much.
And I feel like when I've watched interviews, like they just dwarf me in personality, but you were hanging with them. Like you were hanging with the Midland guys. I feel like you were holding your own. I think
it was fun. There was a lot of, a lot of razzing going on and we had a good time. Yeah, we bought boots. We went up to Jess's farm or ranch, I guess, and outside of Texas, outside of Austin and Dripping Springs, and they played for us, and yeah, it was a blast. It really was. We did.
Was that planned? I'm gonna, because the first thing you say is like, guys, I'm wearing sneakers in Austin. Like, was that planned?
Yeah, of course it's planned.
Of course it's planned.
What do you think?
You're like, you're wearing sneakers, and then you go get boots, and I mean, that is so fun. I think yeah, we
should it was fun.
The series back. Can we get a sponsor?
I would love to do that. Yeah, let's do it. We'll team up with you and we'll do it. We'll ride around and interview people. We'll do a podcast in a truck.
In a truck. I feel like that's the like, when did Carpool Karaoke come out? Was that 2017? You might have been ahead of the time, ahead of the curve, interviewing artists in a truck. That might be the.
It was a fun time, man. It really was. It was one of the most fun things I've done. Certainly outside of the box, right? Because when you go back, you're talking about copy editing listings for TV, a TV
now
guide.
You're like Anthony Bourdain. It was
it's just, it was fun. It was a lot. It was a really fun thing to do.
That's cool to see, because one of the cool things about it was that you kind of went out in Nashville a little bit, and you were mm-hmm. in Austin, you were in like Washington, I think, with,
Bailey Bryan.
Bailey Bryan. Yeah. Like, so I'm curious, you are Rolling Stone country, like you said, like Rolling Stone Nashville, mm-hmm. but there is a scene of a genre that happens around the country or even around the world that maybe doesn't get covered in mainstream Rolling Stone, whatever that is. Is there a responsibility to cover those like things as well, or to cover the genre on a national scope and then maybe even on an international scope? Or is it more that we're covering what's happening in Nashville and kind of like loosely around it, basically?
No, whatever's moving the needle, whatever is in the cultural conversation, the zeitgeist, the pop culture world, nothing is off the table. And really my favorite part of this job is writing about artists that no one knows yet and being able to give them a boost. And I just think that's the most rewarding aspect of this, is to find someone that you're really high on and be able to say, hey, give this guy a listen, or this girl a listen, or this band a listen, and people like it, or they don't.
Who's hot that, right now? Who do you think is taking off right now that's got your eye or your ear?
We're all really high on this record by Morgan Wade, which just came out this week.
That's a great record, actually. Yep. She's incredible.
Really awesome. Yeah. What else do we like? Gosh, I knew you were going to ask me this. And
Cigarette on that album is an amazing song, which was, I think,
really good. Yep.
That was on like Music Friday.
Really good. Let me see, man.
Let's see what's on your, do you listen to Spotify? Is that your listening?
I can't say.
I can't say. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Hang on, man. That Morgan Wade record. You know what's really good too is the Midland Sonic Ranch soundtrack. They
How
put out
cool
that.
How cool is that? Also,
yeah,
because those are the original recordings, aren't? Or the original songs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, right. They were songs that they wrote before they ever had a deal, before they ever were a band. It's cool. Yeah, but there's a lot of good stuff. You just have to look for it. My favorite thing that happened when we started Rolling Stone was I went to go see a friend of mine was playing drums for another artist who was headlining that night at the Basement, and the artist opening for them was Margot Price. And I went and saw Margot for the very first time, and I met her afterward, and I said, wow, I said, you're just amazing. I said, this is really great stuff. I said, do you have like a record, or do you have, and she's like, no, not right now. And I was like, wow, well, you need to make that happen. And a few months later I got an email from her, and they had shot a video for the song, and we ended up putting it on Rolling Stone, and you know, here she is now, right, doing Saturday Night Live and nominated for Grammys and everything else. And it was, I can't tell you how rewarding that was to be able to, the system works, you know, you're able to go into a bar still, pre-pandemic, I guess I should qualify, but you're able to go into a bar, into a club, see someone playing music, be so taken by it that you have to speak to them afterward. And then they're in your, on your radar, and you end up writing about them. And, you know, she got the deal with Third Man after that and did right, Saturday Night Live. And here we are. Yeah. So
rises to the top.
I like to think that, you know, we had a little bit of sway with that. You know?
I do kind of connect Rolling Stone with Margot Price. Maybe it's just because that you guys write about her a lot, but I do feel like it's part of her story in a way. Maybe it might have even been the first place I heard about her.
Yeah.
In Rolling Stone. I do feel like it's a part of her story.
Yeah. I'm so happy to see her doing well. It's, you know, it's cool. Like I said, it's the most satisfying part of this job.
Absolutely. So how often do you look at, you know, I guess recently Penske Media kind of bought like Billboard and Rolling Stone, Variety, and a couple other publications. How often do you look at what those other, like Billboard, Variety, do you look at what they're doing?
And say,
what can we do different? Like, are you always comparing with other magazines in the umbrella or even beyond?
I don't know if I'm comparing, but you know, it's part of my daily routine. I mean, the news gathering cycle, you know, I get up in the morning, you know,
what do you read?
Oh gosh. What do I read? I'll go through all the main, I'll go through New York Times, Washington Post, and the Tennessean. I'll check all that off in the morning. I usually read my Philly paper because, you know, I like to know what's going on back home.
Go Penguins.
Flyers, man.
Oh, Flyers. Wow. That's right, actually. That's the team. I blew it.
Yeah.
Flyers. Okay, yeah.
Back in Wilkes-Barre, where I grew up.
Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh is the Penguins, right.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. But yeah, so what else was there? What else do I read? You know who I really love? I love reading the Whiskey Riff guys. WhiskeyRiff.com. Do you go to that website?
I don't really go there. Is that what I should be reading? From Whiskey Riff?
I think it's a blast, man. I love the voice of those two guys, and they write some pretty funny stuff. They found this cool mix of like country music writing and, you know, reporting, but also they'll include like a guy who drinks like 40 Gatorades in 2 minutes. And it's just this.
Here's an article about a candle called Bar Smells. Bring home that stale dive bar smell with Miller Lite's new line of bar smell candles. That's the content you're getting from Whiskey Riff.
That's it. That is the content I'm getting, and I'm here for it. You know, it's a nice mix of that and, you know, Chris Stapleton covering, you know, John Lennon or something. It's fun. You should check it out. I really like the way those guys write.
Whiskey Riff. Okay. I'm going to check it out. Do you like the Lefsetz Law? Do you like Bob Lefsetz?
I subscribe to it. Yeah.
That's a good answer. That's the answer. Have there been any crazy moments that have happened during the pandemic that, you know, I guess in person you can go to the award shows, you can, you know, do an interview with someone in person who's just iconic and amazing. Has there been anything that's come out of the pandemic that's just been amazing this year, or any anything that probably wouldn't have happened otherwise?
Yeah. I think the we're all so tired of the live stream. I can't imagine music fans are still, you know, looking forward to them as much as we did. But I think some of them were just really well done. You know, there's a band out of Philly called Low Cut Connie. They're not country, but they have played the Luck Reunion and stuff at Willie's Ranch during South by Southwest. They did just a phenomenal live stream series. It was like the closest I've come to being at a show has been their live stream.
Why was it so good? Was it just shot really well?
It was shot in a very small apartment in South Philly, and Adam Wiener, who is the leader of Low Cut Connie and is Low Cut Connie, he plays piano like Little Richard, and he preaches like Bruce Springsteen. And by the end of every live stream, he's down to usually his underwear and a tank top or in a boxing robe. It is superb online entertainment, and I recommend it to everyone. It is just so good. Yeah, that's exactly why. But otherwise, I don't know, man. I mean, I have to tell you, we've been shut-ins. My wife and I have been staying at home all of the pandemic. We've been very good pandemic citizens.
Yeah, me too. I feel like I never leave this apartment.
Where are you? Are you in Nashville?
I'm in Nashville. I'm in Midtown. Yeah, yeah.
The old Country Weekly offices were above the, what is that? Off Broadway Shoes? Up Broadway Shoes still over there? The shoe store? Across from DeSano's Pizza.
I love DeSano's Pizza.
Right across the street. Right across the street from that is where Country Weekly was.
I don't know if it's still there, but okay, that's where it used to be. That's my favorite pizza in Nashville, though, as a New Yorker.
Is that right?
Is DeSano's. By far, yeah. And I've tried them all because I've tried to find the best. And DeSano's is really good. I think if I lived in New York and DeSano's was there, I would still eat it. That's my...
What about Joey's? Have you been to Joey's?
You know what? As I just said, I've tried everything. I've not been to Joey's.
Oh, you got to try Joey's.
Is Joey's the place? Where is Joey's?
Joey's House of Pizza on Elm Hill Pike. It is
But this
fantastic.
Does not look... Is this really it? This doesn't have the right look. Oh, well, it kind of does have the right look, actually.
You got to go.
Is this...
It is great fun.
Public service announcement, Joey. This looks actually very close to a New York style pizza.
It's very good. There are wonderful Joey's, people there. I love it.
Like DeSalle's is not New York style, but it's very good, which is all I care about. But this actually looks like New York style.
Yeah, that's good. And then Manny's in the arcade on Fifth there.
Manny's is okay. I don't know. I don't love Manny's. It's good, I guess. I don't have a reason not to like it. I prefer Five Points, actually.
I like Five Points. What about Italian food? Where's your Italian go-to here?
I don't really eat. You know, I like Modo right by Virago. It's like a little high-end, but I think that's good. But I don't really – I've been to a couple of – like there's the place in Edge Hill, which I've been to.
Napoli.
Like I've been there. The pizzas are good there. I like
that place. I like Bella Napoli. They have a solid chicken parm.
I like Bella Napoli, but it's not – I don't eat that much Italian food in general, I feel like. But if I –
Yeah.
If I don't know, I'd probably go to Modo if I was going to splurge and like if I was really feeling Italian Fair. Food. But what do you have a favorite restaurant? I know that's not relevant, but like in Nashville, like where like
Nikki's Coal Fired.
Date night with the wife. Where are you going to go?
Date night with the wife is Nikki's Coal Fired in the Nations.
That's a great spot. Also,
it's so good. It is the best. I can't wait. I can't wait to go back.
I'm thinking about where I'm going to return post-pandemic, and I think Fenwick's is where I want to go to get breakfast, which is my favorite breakfast in Nashville. And I really like Rolf and Daughters on the high end if you're going to splurge and kind of go for it.
And Lachlan Table. I love Lachlan Table.
Lachlan Table is great, and I love Butcher and Bee also. But I think some new restaurants have opened up that I haven't even tried yet, right?
Yeah, I think so, man. Yeah, we haven't, like I said, we haven't done much through the pandemic, so we've just been doing our like usual takeout. And
Where's, not to get too much on the food, but I'm just always, because I'm always looking for new options. What's the best takeout, or what do you like for takeout in Nashville?
We like Koi Sushi and Thai in East Nashville. We also love Namzilla, and we love the new barbecue place Shotgun Willie's. I don't know if you've been there.
I've not been there.
Awesome.
Really?
Yeah. And Sip Cafe for coffee, man. They are a local great coffee place. Sip.
Sip Cafe. Shotgun Willie's. I might try that.
Shotgun Willie's, man. It's right across from Sip. So go get your latte. Go across the street. Get your Shotgun Willie's brisket. You'll be living.
This is not a plug. This is an
not a plug, man.
He won't tell me his DSP of choice, but he will tell me his favorite restaurants and shoot some others under the bus. So who do you think is the ultimate country historian? Like if you're writing an article and you're like, ooh, I really need some information on this, or I really need to get some facts on that. I'm sure there's a variety of people that you might call or that you have in your index.
Yeah,
but are there a couple of people that you think are just brilliant about the history of country music?
Robert Overman is just
phenomenal. Right?
Yeah, it's just
he's incredible.
It's fantastic. And you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, our own writer, Steve Betts. Stephen L. Betts used to work at the Hall of Fame. He lives up in New York now. Just a walking encyclopedia of country minutia. It's fabulous to watch and work with him.
Do you get into the Country Music Hall of Fame archives? I've always wanted to check those out.
You know, I haven't. I always wanted to, too. And I wanted to kind of like nose around in there. And I just never had a chance. Maybe after pandemic, I'll get in there and do some research.
I think I need to find a purpose to go in there, right? Is that what you have to do? Like, I can't just get, I need a purpose to go in. Like, I need to come up with
a reason. I don't know. Man, the Hall of Fame, you've been, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so great, isn't it?
It is great, actually.
I always tell everyone, man, you come to Nashville, even if you're not a quote-unquote country fan, you're going to love the Hall of Fame. It's
but there's something so there cool. You'll connect with. You'll connect with seeing that, you know, there's an artist that you know that you'll connect with something at the Hall of Fame. When they did an exhibit on Gretsch guitars, couple of years ago, which was amazing to see. And then
they
always, the Casey Musgraves exhibit was incredible to see. They always do something. There's something there you'll connect with, even if you're not like a classic country fan or whatever it is.
It is a must visit. That is for sure.
The archives. I think we've got to figure out how to get into the archives.
Yeah, let's do it.
That's what I want to figure out. Joseph, we have covered so much here. Have we left anything out? What's what have we left out here? What's around the corner? What else can we say?
What's around the corner? When's this going up? You tell me.
Probably within the next week or a couple weeks, give or take.
Let's see. What's coming up?
What are we excited about?
The new Eric Church album is phenomenal. Have you heard the new Eric Church record, the triple disc, Heart and Soul?
Well, wait, it hasn't come out yet.
Right? No, it hasn't, but I don't know when you're going to post this.
I have heard it, but I will, first of all, so a couple things about this Eric Church album, which I want to pull up what's been released. I think the branding is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Why is he doing this? It's all very simple. Is that the point to let the music speak for itself? Have you thought about this? Is the record cover going to be like that?
Yeah, it's cool. So I interviewed him recently, and that's why I was asking you when this is coming out. But he decided to call it Heart and Soul in each album. Right. Each word, Heart and Soul, is its own record.
Right.
And so there's not necessarily a theme per se to each one, I wouldn't think. But it definitely is all recorded from this marathon month-long session he did in North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
Yeah, it's terrific stuff. There's a great vibe to it. He explores some things. There's some stuff that sounds like Meatloaf.
Is there really?
Yeah, it's
Has
it's
any
really
of that
good.
Been released yet?
Nope, those two songs have not been released, but I cannot wait. So I want to see what fans think. A song called Russian Roulette and Heart of the Night. And they go back to back, Heart of the Night and the Russian Roulette. And to me, it sounds like something that was left off of Bat Out of Hell, or could have been on Bat Out of Hell.
Some of like Hell of a View I've listened to a lot.
That's good.
Heart on Fire,
really good.
On repeat, I've been listening to that song.
Yeah,
I'm not as cool as Joseph to get the advance copy. Nobody's hitting me up for the advance Eric Church copy. But I'm very excited for this record. Is this
going
to be a trend, do you think, of artists releasing such massive records? I mean,
I do. I really do. I mean, I wonder if part of it is kind of like the pandemic and people were, you know, had this time to like write all this stuff or record all this stuff, and now they're just going to put it out. The cynical side of me says it could be in order to gain streaming numbers, right? The more tracks you put on an album, the more, equivalence that you accrue. So it's like, you know, he put out the triple record, Thomas Rhett, has stuff coming out. I mean, there's a lot of people that have done
the success, whatever you say, what you will about all the controversy, the success of the Morgan Wallen record that's still number one for like the 10th week in a row. It's just fans want more content.
10 weeks, man. It's crazy. But it's so much content out there. There's just too much to digest. You know, you asked me about which DSP I listen to. It's like all of them basically, because you know that you're always going to find something curated by a different, a different music geek like myself, you know? So it's fun. You know, there's a lot to discover based on playlists.
What's the best, like you always say when you're pitching a new artist or when you're working on a new release, mm-hmm. like I work for a label in town and it's always, what's the story? We got to get the story right. You know, that's what's really going to sell this is the story. The Eric Church thing has a little bit of a baked in story. The fact that he cooped up, you know, recording this in North Carolina. Like, what do you look for to kind of pique your interest, I guess, beyond the music? Like, if the music's equal with two projects, like, what about a story do you like to see or look for? Like, what can us on the other side manufacture to have you write about us in Rolling Stone? What does it take?
Manufacture.
What's it going to take?
what's it going to take? Well, listen, I think it has to do... it really has to do with like a universal quality, right? Everyone wants to connect with someone, whether they know who they are or not. You want to feel something in their story that you feel inside. You know, so it's easy to say you want something universal that's going to appeal to a lot of people. But to me, what I like to do is find something that maybe isn't as popular, right? But has an extremely passionate small fan base. So what is it about, you know, this small group of people that, what is it that's resonating with them from a particular artist, you know, like, and you see that a lot, like you look different thing and you see like, why is so-and-so trending on Twitter, or why is I always see these Instagram posts about this particular artist, and yet the mainstream public may not know who they are. And so I think, you know, someone who kind of, what's the word I want? Someone who manifests that type of passion in the his or her fans is what so we
is,
look for.
Is that where you, like, if you hear about a new artist, you're like, I keep hearing about this person and like everyone's bringing it up, I got to look into them. Will you check, well, it's the first place you'll go, Twitter. Will you check engagement on Twitter?
Yep, I do.
See what their Instagram looks like. So you're going to all these places.
I do all of that.
On the followers, or like you're seeing what the comments are saying.
Right, exactly. And what, you know, what that level of passion is and engagement. Are they interacting with their fans? And what does that look like? Why, what is it about their fan base that sets them apart? You know, it's fascinating. You know, there's a lot of metrics anymore, unfortunately. Right or wrong, there's a lot of metrics in the music game, you know?
Absolutely.
A
lot of things to consider. Before I let you run, I always love asking journalists what their favorite books are or what they're reading right now. We talked about news and journalism, what you read, but any books that you're reading right now or anything?
I am reading A Moral Man by Derek Delgadio. I don't know if you've seen his Hulu special called In and of Itself. He is a magician, raconteur. It is a required viewing. My wife and I watched it and we were in tears by the end of it. And I went out and bought the book. You will love it. What else do we got?
Wait, In and of Itself.
Yep. It's on Hulu.
You know what? I actually saw this in New York.
What? You saw it live?
Yeah. And at the end,
come on, man.
There's an amazing thing at the end where
he
calls everyone out.
You went in person? And how was it in person? Tell me.
It was mind-blowing. And I actually I wanted to be the person who writes the page in the book. Does he mention that in the special?
Yeah, you gotta watch. Yeah, it's all in there, right?
I wanted it. But does that, when you see him do that, it's amazing when he calls my name. Because he called
my name. I'm telling you, I cried. What card did you pick?
I picked Mom.
What? Interesting.
And he kind of came up to me and he said, he was like, hello, Mom. Like, he kind of said it like that. And then I sat down. But does that, because when he calls you out, it's crazy to be in that room, but does that translate?
It translates big time on the show. I mean, look, man, maybe I'm just a sucker for manipulation. Who knows? But it is really well done. And we watched it and we're just
so floored. He has a book?
He's got a book. Yeah, it just came out. It's called A Moral Man. And it's basically, it's kind of like, his stage show, you know, that goes a little deeper, and all the people that shaped him into the sleight of hand expert he is. So yeah, that's cool.
Wow. I'm looking at this right now. Are you into magic? Cause I'm very into magic.
Yeah. I love magic. Who doesn't?
Who doesn't love magic? Right.
Right.
I thought I was going to be a magician at one point, not for long,
cool.
But at one point.
You should check that out though. Especially if you saw the show. I'm jealous that you saw it in person, man. I can't imagine how that must have been.
I will check it out. It was pretty wild. It was great because it's the kind of thing where you keep thinking about how that last trick. It's really only one trick. He does a couple other little things, but it's really all for that one trick. But it kept me up for a while. I was like, how the fuck did he do that?
Yeah, that's good. So read that. There's a new book about the 80s hair metal scene that I just got called Nothing But a Good Time. Just arrived.
That's really fun.
Very excited to read that. Great book about the outlaw years in Nashville. It came out a couple of years ago and I finally got to it by Michael Streisguth called Outlaw. It's about Waylon, Willie, and Kris Kristofferson.
Outlaw.
That's been great. And And then a little more like, I guess, spiritual type thing or historical spirituality. Zealot about the historical Jesus by Reza Aslan is just amazing. Like, yeah, it's really good. Yeah. Changed my whole perspective on how I view certain things. You know, it's cool, man. I love talking books.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Talking books and talking music. It's great.
I'm reading right now a classic, which I've never read, which is What Makes Sammy Run.
Cool.
I've never read either. And someone recommended it to me as the ultimate like Hollywood parable. And I was fascinated by it. I'm really liking it. And then what I'm also reading right now is The Operator, which I've wanted to read my entire life, the David Geffen book.
Okay.
But it's 900 pages. I've always been very intimidated by it. So what I'm doing now is I'm reading like 200 pages and I'm reading another book and then I'm back to it. I'm like jumping back and forth, but it's amazing to see, to read his story. It's cool because he intersected obviously at so many points in music. So if you have these gaps in the history of music, David Geffen kind of weaves it all together and you can see where he was at and everything. And it pulls in or it plugs in a lot of paint into the image to kind of see his story with it. So it's fun to be reading it at the moment. I won't keep you. I know how busy you are running the Rolling Stone Country in Nashville office, but I'm so appreciative for taking the time. Thanks for making it happen.
Thank you so much, Zach, man. It was a real pleasure.
Absolutely. Hope to see you at a show or somewhere soon when the world opens up.
I cannot wait.
Absolutely.
I'll see you there.
Stay well. Talk to you soon.
All right, man. Be good.
There you have it. Episode 58 with Joseph Hudak. Joseph and I are actually launching a brand new show that's called Joseph and Zach in Trucks, where we drive around the... I'm just kidding. That's not happening. But Joseph, I think we should do that. If you are listening to this, if you've made it this far and you're listening, I want to launch a travel country music show together. Why not? We'll get Ram to sponsor it. I think this could be a good idea. Anyway, the Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at nashvillebriefing.com or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in and we'll see you next time. Bye.